So I know the this spot is officially a Parsha discussion, but I would like to combine the Parsha with two aspects of a time period that we're in, really two time periods that we're in right now. Today, we know is Yom HaZikaron, right, Israeli Memorial Day. But unlike Memorial Day in America, you go to the beach or the lake. I'm still not convinced that the lake is a beach. Everyone keeps saying it. I'm from Charleston. Like, we have, if there's nothing that can eat you in the water, it's not a beach. So here, there, it's something that's very serious. We had a tekkes last night, this morning. It marks this point of really reflecting on what is the identity of being Jewish, what is the identity of being of Israel. But any of those that have ever thought or talked about Israel with somebody, you know, it's not exactly the most agreed upon topic in the world. So, even amongst, I'm not talking about the news and internally, there's a lot of disagreement about how to deal with Israel. So we come onto this period of Yom HaZikaron, Yom HaTzma'ut, Yom Yishalayim. It's a period where people argue a lot. This morning I went onto a chat room. A book, let's say people post messages. I don't really like them, but they're really good to have things to talk about, which is why I did it this morning, so I can talk about it now. Within 2 seconds of looking at it, you have 16 different opinions of this person's an expert in foreign affairs, and he thinks this is what they should do, and this person's a halakhic expert in this and that. And no one can get along. Everyone seems to be disagreeing on everything in this period. It happens to be, maybe not coincidentally, that all these days always fall out during Sefirot HaOmer. Sefirot HaOmer, we know, at baseline, is when we count, right? Sefirot counts, we count days from Pesach until Shavuos. But we know, historically, that it became not just a period of counting up towards Shavuos, but a period of communal mourning. And we're mourning because, about 1,700 years ago or so, Rabbi Akiva, one of the pillars of our tradition, had a huge, huge base medrash. All the yeshivas in Israel here try to brag about their numbers. They've got nothing on him, right? He had 12,000 chavrusas, pairs of chavrusas, study partners. So that's 24,000 students. It's a lot of people. And they must not have had, like, tables or something. They couldn't fit everyone. Probably had extenders, maybe benches, next to each other. And we know this number because the Talmud tells us that's how many people died. That during a certain period of time, during the time of Sefirot HaOmer, 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva passed away. And the Gemara tells us, why did they pass away? Shel nahagu kavod ze bezeh. They didn't act with honor, with respect towards each other. That bothers me. So it doesn't say they were fighting. It says they weren't acting with respect. Uh-huh. Now, that sounds like fighting. It sounds like a nice way of saying fighting. But regardless of what exactly was going on, this has always bothered me.
Is this language that they were using or what?
She doesn't elaborate. Rabbi Akiva's students. Oh. They all, 24,000 students died.
Yes.
Shelo nahagu kavod ze bezeh. They didn't have honor between each other.
So I'm sure that maybe they called each other by nicknames, you know.
Like there are a lot of explanations to that, but the bottom line, there's something respectful missing here. Now, my tradition has always been, to the degree that you are learned, and this is, we're talking the top yeshiva. This Rabbi Akiva was a master of all areas of Torah. He was a very, very, very learned figure. His students were presumably very learned in themselves to get into that area. To the degree that one is learned, one must be refined in character. In fact, Sefirot HaOmer's time period, we try to refine our character leading up to Shavuos to receive the Torah. If you don't have proper midos, proper character traits, you can't be calling yourself a Torah scholar. So if 24,000 people call themselves Torah scholars, they're the students of Rabbi Akiva, on their resume they have, I studied in Rabbi Akiva's yeshiva, that's... And yet, they didn't respect each other. Well, to the point where they were punished, they were killed. What? How does that happen? How can something like that happen? It's always bothered me. Could they fall prey to such a mistake? Further, what makes this question even worse is that we have a discussion in the Talmud, really the Yerushalmi, discusses, if you want to sum up the Torah into one line, what would it be? There's a discussion, a few suggestions. And Rabbi Akiva steps in, and he quotes our Parsha. And what does he suggest? V'ahavta l'reichav kamocha zekla gadol b'Torah. Love your fellow as yourself. That's the general principle of the Torah. There are certain things. I was with my Rav in yeshiva for 5 years. And there's certain things, at a certain point, I realized that some of the things he says are said over and over again. Some of the stories get repeated, right? When someone really thinks, this is the central message that I want to impart onto my students, they say it often. Rabbi Akiva thinks you can sum up the entire Torah, one line. V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. These guys didn't hear that once or twice. Maybe like in a Musar Shmooz, or maybe a Friday night at the table. He's a guy, you should remember. You should really love your fellow like yourself. You should really... They probably heard it a lot. This is the Klal Gadol. This is the main principle of the Torah. They probably heard it once or twice. And yet, they're the ones. They did not live up to not just not loving each other. They were disrespectful to each other. How can this be happening in Rabbi Akiva's yeshiva? I don't understand. So to understand this point, and understand how this time period really, I think, is actually not just a point where we're seems destined to disagree, but the best time to get along with each other, despite the fact that it's very much not agreed upon, I would like to share an idea that I heard from the Lord himself. Not Hashem, Lord, Rabbi Jonathan Zaks. When he came to YU, when he spoke at YU, I think I heard it that weekend, there were no shortage of Lord jokes. It's too opportune to miss up. So he told us a story, or an idea rather, and in order to understand this idea, I want to fast forward. We know that on the 33rd day of the Omer, the Lag BaOmer, that is the day we celebrate. One of the reasons we celebrate is because Rabbi Akiva's students stopped dying. So there are other, Baruch Hashem, there are other reasons to celebrate. I have never understood that reason. Because why did they stop dying? Because they were all dead. That's not celebratory. That's just, we're done. There's no one else left. Wait. So Rabbi Akiva at this point does not give up. Part of the reason we're really to celebrate is because what he did next. He says, I'm not done. I'm going to start over. And he picks up 5 of the best people left, best minds left in the Jewish people, and he starts all over again. And he reignites the torch of Torah through these 5 people. And if you look at these students, again, coming out of one place, they're all students of Rabbi Akiva, you notice a similarity which is a difference. They're very, very different people. If you look at them throughout Talmud, their stories, their lives, their opinions, they are very, very different people. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, his yard site is Lag BaOmer itself. He was a master Kabbalist, right? He was a very... You look through his opinions, they're very varied all over the place. He himself had almost a challenge with the government and the Roman authorities. He had to spend time hiding. He was chased after, and he was, at the point, very, very intense. Always a big thing, he wrote the Zohar. He was somebody who was really focused on the spiritual, focused on what's behind the scenes. Right? The other hand, we have Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, he's somebody who's very, very careful, every detail. He wants everything to be perfect. Rabbi Meir is a person who we can't always understand what he says. He's not so clear sometimes. And we can't always understand how he acted, right? One of his teachers went by the name of Acher. Acher was the name given to Rabbi Elisha ben Abuya after he dropped the name Rabbi and became a heretic. And he was completely off. The Talmud tells us that he rode his horse on the Temple Mount on Yom Kippur while eating, I think, eating something. Not the... Went to 60 to 0, pretty... Rabbi Meir said, no, it's okay, I'm going to learn from him anyway. He has lots of Torah to teach me. So, it's interesting. People didn't trust his psak because of that. They weren't sure, is what he's saying right now something he got from Acher, or is something he got from Rabbi Akiva? This is someone who has this, from Rabbi Akiva, has the inclination to go learn from Acher. I don't think Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai would ever think of doing such a thing. Rabbi Yossi, was very big into bringing shalom between people. The Mishnah talks about him, someone who wants shalom, wants to bring shalom between people. Clearly got it from his teacher. He was a valued worker. He worked very hard. He was a tanner. Right? I don't know how a lot of you look through the Talmud, a lot of these jobs kind of went out of style in the last 1,500 years. Right? Not so many tanners left. So Rabbi Yehuda was extraordinarily pious, but also extraordinarily poor. He was not by any means a wealthy person. The flip side, Rabbi Elazar, another one of the two Talmidim, was extraordinarily wealthy. Interesting that those two points actually seem to come from the same place. Rabbi Akiva, at times in his life, he married into tremendous wealth, but at the same time spent a lot of time very, very poor. These five characters, though, they're very, very different. How can they all come from the same person? How could they all come? They all have the same teacher, that they express the ideas very, very differently. The truth is, Rabbi Akiva is someone who synthesized a lot of ideas. Right? He was someone who looked for God in everything. In the darkest of places, the Talmud tells us that at the end of his life is an extremely brutal time of oppression. He was somebody who risked his life to get to the depths of Torah. Right? His financial stature going up and down, his work, what he did, what his wife did. And I think this complexity caused the challenge in the very first place. But Rabbi Akiva was not a simple individual. He was not somebody who, he said, I could sum up all the Torah on one sentence. Klal Gadol, right? Think about it. Love your neighbor like, is that the easiest mitzvah we have in the world? Right? There are lots of things that I find challenging, some things I don't find challenging. Loving people is sometimes hard. Right? Sometimes people do things that I don't agree with. Often people do things I don't agree with. It's hard. He says, yeah, you should do it anyway. And he teaches the students this thing, and he teaches the students this complexity, this dynamic and nuanced lessons. And he teaches them these things, and they all thought they got it. They all thought they understood what their teacher was telling. And then they went, and they spoke about that with their friends, with their chavrusa, and their chavrusa had a totally different story. He said, whoa. What are you saying? Rabbi said this. I don't know what shir you were in. Rabbi said this. And they go back and forth. There's two students of Rabbi Soloveitchik in YU, prominent Rebbeim. And usually they agree on most of the themes, but every so often one of them will quote Rabbi Soloveitchik and was like, he never said that. So of course he said that. And they go back and forth. They get into this. They said, Rabbi Akiva said this. This is clearly what he held. And then they say, whoa. I have no idea what you're talking about. He clearly said this. And they go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And they start fighting about it. Why are they fighting about it? They don't hate each other. They want to uphold their teacher's Torah. They want to uphold the kavod of their Rebbe. It's not a question of their disrespectful people. But where are they putting that respect? They want to respect their Rebbe. And if suddenly this guy is going to come and he's going to quote my Rebbe as saying something ridiculous, like how could you possibly suggest it? So they're going to stand up for their Rebbe. And then this person is doing the exact same thing and it's the opposite. They start fighting. And he starts getting into this. Rabbi Sack says, this is not just Rabbi Akiva that this phenomenon happens to. This happens all over the place. When you look at every figure, really, it happens. I think sometimes we all, right? There's a sort of a joke that if you look at where you are, right? Your philosophies, your politics, your religiosity, right? So there's a spectrum. Everyone on the left of me is a heretic or just unintelligent. Everyone on the right of me is a radical b'shugana. So right now I'm in the middle, right? There's a spectrum. So every single person who managed to span that spectrum wasn't just a perfect little box that just threw off everybody on both sides of them. If you look at them, the next generation has a very hard time. Right? A nuanced thinker, a nuanced teacher, is very hard to communicate that nuance sometimes. And Rabbi Akiva, who has a tremendous depth of knowledge, the Talmud tells us Rabbi Akiva is the only one who went to the Pardes, the orchard of wisdom, and came out unscathed. He's someone who is tremendous. Chachma, tremendous wisdom, tremendous knowledge, depth of Torah. For him to communicate that to his students, it's not a fault of his. It's just a reality. It can be led with a challenge, because that next generation tries to understand it, but they're just not there yet. Rabbi Akiva had decades of learning behind him. His students are 18, 19, I don't know how old they were, but they're not necessarily the same maturity, the same understanding of them. Rabbi Sacks says that this led to that fighting, and we see this throughout history. Throughout just our 100 years, we see three of the most dynamic and nuanced thinkers of Jewish people had students that went every direction. Right? There's Soloveitchik himself. His students range probably the entire spectrum of Jewish thought. You have people that are very, very modern and progressive. You have students of his that are extraordinarily Haredi. And neither of them are misrepresenting him. They argue on fundamental points. But they got their tradition from the same place. Lubavitcher Rebbe, if you once passed away, there was a tremendous amount of just, how do we go forward? How do you go forward in this thing? The questions of messianism, of outreach versus inreach. Should we start a new leadership? Should we go where we left off? It's a split community. There's a tremendous amount of challenge there. The students of Rav Kook, right? Rav Kook had two primary students. That was the Nazir and his son. And there are many major areas of Torah ideas about Israel, ideas about mysticism, about philosophy, college. They disagreed strongly on these. And their students splintered. Their students broke into different camps because of it. Because they couldn't grasp that nuance, that complexity that their teacher was able to express. A complex teacher leads to a challenge to really understand and uphold their values. And a complex leader winds up with a complex array of students. So even with the best of intentions, I don't think they were trying to be malicious. They definitely weren't trying to be malicious. The students of Rabbi Akiva had this complexity that led to disagreement. Disagreement led to dissent. Dissent could lead to fighting, whatever the specific details were. And let the Shalom Nahagu Kavod Zebezeh. But the complex issues necessarily leads to a range of opinions. As we're going to see, I think that range of opinions could bring the Shalom of this period of time. Right? Judaism, generally speaking, starts with this assumption of an objective point, right? We assume that the Torah tells us the truth, an idea, which is great. We can just say this is that. One of our Rosh Kola, Rabbi Brand, told me, you never say the Jewish view on X because there's going to be six of them. So it's not the, it's a few, or a, or however you want to phrase it, right? But we have issues that come up. Right, let's take Israel as an example. We have issues that come up. We have to act based on those issues. We have to decide something. So how do we do that? When a complex issue comes up, how do we handle this? Do we fight about it until we just give up? Do we wait until Hashem clearly gives us an answer? Should we engage with the political systems of Israel? Should we not engage with it? Right? The whole fights about Yom HaTzmaut are based on these points. Is it the beginning of redemption? Is it not the beginning of redemption? Is it a miracle? Is it a Maaseh Satan? I'll be dancing tonight at the Yom HaTzmaut event. But I have my own opinion. I have what I subscribe to. But I know it's not black and white per se. Maybe blue and white, but it's a complicated issue. And everyone in this conversation, most of this conversation, they have the same intention. They want to get to the truth of the matter. They want to figure out what is the right thing to do. They want to serve Hashem the best we can. Right. This past Shabbos, the first Shach there was in Westminster Park. I live in Skokie, so I don't actually know what he said. But someone told me that he said, he quoted, and he's a very Zionist figure. He was in for a Mizrahi Shabbos. He quoted a Turi Karta song and was able to find meaning in it. He was able to say that he doesn't agree with them at all. Like, at all. But he was able to find meaning because he realizes they're trying to serve Hashem. He thinks they're wrong. I agree with him. But we're all trying to get to the same point, right? It's like a vacation. A family has this goal. Jewish people have this goal. The family has a vacation goal. They want to have a good time and bring everyone together. So they go to Disney World, and the three-year-old wants to go on It's a Small World After All 16 times. I was that three-year-old. I don't want to bring my kid because Disney World because I don't want to do it 16 times. I'm sure he's going to want to also. And the older kid wants to do the Log Flume all over again. But the little kid can't. One parent likes these rides. The other parent gets sick. That was also my family. And they start fighting. there's like, no, we have to do this, we have to do this, they can't, because this one's on that side of the park, and they suddenly this beautiful vacation that everyone agrees, we're doing this in order to get along and to bring everyone together and have a good time, suddenly is a disaster. So I don't go to Disney World. But they all have the same goal. How could that possibly happen? So how is this that the fighting is like its natural outcome? How can we have all these issues? How can we act together? So I'd like to look at one of our complex figures, Rav Kook, an idea that he has that I think can solve our issue and can help us in this time of complexity, in this challenge. And in order to do that, I'd like to look. He says something. He has a text. I just found out yesterday, actually. He wrote this text, Einaya, which is a very complex philosophical commentary to Medrash of all of Brachos and Shabbos. So it's very challenging. Probably one of the easier works of him. Doesn't say everything is relative. I found out he wrote it when he was 17 years old. Great. I'm on a roll. Okay. So in that he quotes a Gemara. It says, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Rabbi Hananya, Talmidei Chachamim, Marbim Shalom, Ba'olam. That Torah scholars increase Shalom in the world. And he asked the obvious question, right? Every so often, scholars disagree with each other, right? In fact, very often, scholars disagree with each other. If you were to take a survey of any given question at all different Rosh Yeshiva, all the leaders of yeshivas, you'll probably not have all that many overlapping answers. They have a very hard time agreeing with each other. So this led to Rabbi Akiva's yeshiva alone, all this fighting. You have the fighting about Israel. How can he suggest that of all people, Talmidei Chachamim are the ones that bring Shalom to the world? They're the ones that bring the ideas that we fight about in the first place, right? The chat room. They're not Talmidei Chachamim. They heard something that they misunderstood from some rabbi, and they try to go on here and start fighting about it. How can we say that Talmidei Chachamim are the ones that bring Shalom to the world? He doesn't understand. There was actually a story a few years ago in YU. Unclear exactly why this happened, but some cardinals came. Not the birds, the Catholics. Cardinals came to YU. And they wanted to tour around, so someone said, okay, sure, get him a guest pass. And they go into the basement, and they see two boys yelling at each other, screaming at each other. And they step in and says, what did he do? Why are you screaming at this guy? He says, we're learning a passage in the Talmud, and I explained what it means. And then he asked a question that clearly shows he has no idea what I was talking about. How can he possibly say this? It's ridiculous. And they start fighting. He says, what are you talking about? You don't understand anything you said. They start screaming at each other. Whoa. Just calm down. First of all, so that religion, we don't ask questions. One of them says, yeah, I believe that. He says, why are you fighting? Why are you so mad at him? Says, who said I was mad at him? He's one of my best friends. With friends like that, okay? He says that Shalom is not, there's no disagreement. Shalom is not that we just sit back and assume that either everyone think what I think, or that I have to just turn off my mind and think what you think. Rav Kook says Shalom is much, much more complicated than that. He says Shalom means shalem, means whole. Everything is where it's supposed to be. Everything is complete. It's complex. Right? He says that Talmidei Chachamim analyze something to the depths of that matter. Right? We go through, if you ever look through a Talmudic sugya topic, we're learning Temura right now. Temura is when you take an animal and you sanctify it to be a korban, and then you get this bright idea that instead of this one, I'm going to switch to that one. So the Torah says, not only have you violated a sin, you're also stuck. They're both korbanos. Ha! Great. So I thought, okay, so when I have my sheep and I sanctify my sheep, don't try to switch it. We're done here. Have a good day. We can go home now. There's a lot more to it than that. A lot of fine details, and if you look through these details, I'm hard-pressed to find someone who would really violate this. Right? When we were learning basar v'chalav, milk and meats, the laws and kashrus, my friend of mine pointed out, in order to violate the Torah prohibitions, a lot of rabbinic prohibitions, but really, to really violate the fundamental Torah prohibition, you have to be malicious or stupid. Like it's pretty hard. And yet we have all these details, and of course, life happens. These details, they analyze it to the very finest, not finest points and the nuance in every single detail of it. And they have different perspectives because they're coming from different places. Talmud tells us that just like every single person's face is not the same. Our minds are not the same. We come with different experiences. We come from different perspectives, different ways of thinking about things. So every single one of these Talmidei Chachamim, these scholars come at something, and they're going to come out with a completely different conclusion. And it says that what brings shalom. It's not that they try to bring people together and have the same idea. It's because they disagree. That is what brings shalom. From that word shalem. It's how so. So that Judaism is complicated. The world is complicated. There's a lot of different nuance. If you were to ask a real honest person, what is any given topic? Are cell phones good or bad? I can find you an opinion that says these are a godsend and these are the work of the devil. Right? On the one hand, I can communicate. My sister-in-law lives in Israel. My wife talks with her more now, I think, than when we lived in the same building in New York. Right? We see each other more. It's amazing. It's terrific. I have so much access to information. I could also spend infinite amount of hours watching videos that are completely useless and a completely waste of my time. And I can do things that are much worse than that. Are cell phones good or are they bad?
Both.
It's not a fair question. There's different aspects, right? They're both. There are nuances of it. The world is not black and white. It's infinite shades of gray. He says to have Talmidei Chachamim that can really go and understand things, and they're going to come out with different conclusions, and they're all right. And if you can figure out how to live together with that, that's what brings shalom. It's a hospital. You go to a hospital, and everyone has different roles, right? If the doctor decided to be the janitor, and the janitor decided to be the doctor, there would be an issue. And if the nurse suddenly said she's done, she wants to be the security guard, everyone has their role. Now, their roles are very, very different. Right? I expect my doctor to be objective. I expect my nurse to be nice. And I expect the security guard to be very tough. And if you flip those qualities together, it'll be a very interesting nurse. One time I did have a nurse that was probably a security guard also. But we want them to be the differences. They're not supposed to be the same. And because of that, the hospital functions. Right? If they were to try switching that, it would be really scary. It's supposed to be different. It's supposed to be that everyone has different roles. You gotta look at Israel right now. Should everyone be serving in the army? Should everyone be learning? Should everyone be working? No. Everyone should not be doing any given thing. There's a lot of different jobs that are needed in Israel. People need to be protecting the country. There need to be a spiritual platform. And there need to be people working. And there need to be... It's a complicated place. It's life. It's a world. Not one size fits all. And when you analyze something and you learn something to that degree, that brings the shalom. When you work together. To understand this a little bit better, I want to go back to Rabbi Akiva. Right? Rabbi Akiva's students somehow missed this complexity. And I think it's because not that they had anything wrong with them, but they missed something very specific in their Rebbe's klal, his klal gadol. V'ahavta l'recha kamocha, you're supposed to love your fellow like yourself. I'd like to suggest maybe they thought the kamocha was too much. They thought about that too much. They were supposed to like myself. I look at what's good for me, and I know what's good for me. So I love you, and therefore I want you to be like me, because I love me, and like you like me. That's not how it works, though. Right? If you look at the same place the Gemara tells us about this Klal Gadol, there's another story, he says. Not a story, a mashal. Says, the second half of that pasuk, everyone likes to quote, they have to learn Kamocha, because it's a really nice expiring. What's the other part of that pasuk? That's in the Gemara, in Torah itself, where this pasuk comes up, where Rabbi Akiva is quoting, there's another half to that pasuk. It's the Isra of Nakama and Ikara. Taking revenge and holding a grudge. It's very nice to inspire, like, everyone loves yourself like yourself. Do you ever hold grudges? Let's not talk about that. Right? The Pasuk puts them together for a reason. And when the Yishalmi talks about this, it gives a mashal. What is Nakama? What is revenge? You're in the kitchen. And you're chopping up vegetables. And you slip. I mean, not you. I slip frequently. And I nick my other hand. So, my other hand takes a knife and slaps back into this hand. How could you possibly nick me? And it causes you to fight between hands, right? That's called mental illness. That's not healthy. Talmud says, we're all part of the same people. We're all part of Klal Yisrael. We're all one unit that is Klal Yisrael, right? Right? Ish echad chalev echad. When we receive the Torah, we are one person with one heart. Someone does something to you, okay, we need to talk to them. I have to learn how to be a little more careful with my hands. That's definitely true. We have to talk to this person who did something wrong. Attacking him is not helping anybody. It's part of the same body. You don't fight with yourself because you accidentally slipped and hit yourself. That would be ridiculous. That doesn't make any sense. When somebody, part of the Jewish people, does something, hopefully it doesn't happen, but if somebody does something that's not so nice, fighting with them, just fighting with yourself. What does it mean about how to learn kamocha? Love your, like, yourself? Because we're all part of the same collective self. And we're all part of the same collective self. We have the same muscle. We can apply the same muscle of the hospital to my body parts, right? If my hands were the same as my feet, and my eyes were the same as my nose, and my mouth was the same as my forehead, it would be a not particularly functioning body part, right? Medicine's not my forte. My wife is a pharmacist, and she knows that these little tiny... I look at pills, and they look, okay, this one's a circle, and this one's a square, this one's green, and that one's yellow. Okay, great. What do I do now? Like, the green one this time, I have no idea what these do. He says, there's little tiny chemicals inside of each of these pills, these nuances that shift the body in such a right way that the liver versus the kidney, and they're supposed to function differently. Her job is to put them all together. My job is to listen to her. So the body is different. The body has all these different aspects. You have to learn the details of those. Klal Yisrael has all these different aspects, all these different nuances. And our job is to put them together and be all of Klal Yisrael. V'ahavta lo yecha chamocha means we have to know that we're all one people and we all love ourselves. We love the Jewish people as its entity. And we want it to work together. We want this nuance. We know that there's complexity in the world. That there are things we're going to disagree on, and that's okay. If your focus is on the whole, even though in the immediate moment, the immediate issue, I don't agree, you can still have love for that person. You can still have respect for that person. By getting past the self and seeing the collective Jewish people self, we have the ability to actually get past this and bring that shalom. I just want to tell a quick story of Rav Kook, actually. Rav Kook, and if you were to point the oversimplify things, which I'm about to do, and point in Rav Kook's time the two leaders of the Jewish people, it would probably be at least two different camps. Rav Kook had the sort of religious Zionist aspect of Judaism, which had a lot of overlap into the secular aspects of it. And then Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnfeld had the more Haredi, the not as Zionistic approach. And while they personally were friendly with each other, their students were not always, and they disagreed about probably everything you could possibly have a disagreement about, in comes particularly to Israel. So at one point, there was a issue, there was, I believe, a stabbing, there was some sort of fighting between the Arabs and the Jews, and everyone wanted to come up with a solution. And at that particular point, which changes every few months, the Arabs claimed the problem was Yerushalayim, the Jerusalem, that the Jews are saying they want to take this land, this is our land, going back and forth, and they wanted to suggest, as part of a peace process, we couldn't even consider this today, that we're going to make the Kotel off limits for Jewish prayer, and then they'll stop attacking them. That was the suggestion. Today, you hear that, and just it makes you cringe. It's a terrible idea. In that time period, people were taking it very seriously. So Rav Kook hears about this, and he's very, very concerned. Because he knows that the more Haredi camp is going to do everything it can to save people. They don't have the Israeli idealism. They don't have this on their radar. They want to make sure this doesn't happen. And he sends one of his students to go find a student to Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnfeld and tell him, you cannot do this, please. I know we don't agree. You can't let this go through. Please don't let them agree to this. While this is happening, a student of Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnfeld himself says, I'm very afraid that with the political influences and all this discussion, Rav Kook is going to acquiesce and he's going to give up the Kotel. And this is a place, Makom Kadosh, is a holy place. We cannot let him sacrifice this. I'm very afraid, because of the political pressure, he's going to sacrifice this. We cannot let that happen. He sends one of his students to go talk to Rav Kook. I know we don't agree, but you can't let this happen. On the way, these two students come up, and they meet each other, They must have known who each other were. He says, oh, Shalom Aleichem, how you doing? Shalom, where are you off to? He's like, well, I'm off to Rav Kook to tell him not to give up the kotel. I was like, oh, what a coincidence. Rav Kook just sent me to Rav Chaim Zonnenfeld to tell him not to give up the kotel. He's like, well, I guess we can just go back now. And very often, even though with this nuance, it comes out that we really all want, it always is, we all want the same thing. Sometimes it actually plays out that it really is, we just think. Right? As one time I was learning with my Chavrusa, and I proceeded to give an explanation I thought was the Talmud Gemara was saying. And he looked at me and said, that's a dumb explanation. And I said, all right, please explain it better. And he explained it. And I asked him, well, explain now, how is that different from what I just said? I guess it's not. Thank you. We put ourselves, look past ourselves. We look just at our goal. We look at the big picture. What is it that we want? The claw Yisrael. We make that our starting point, that our goal. Even if we have real disagreements, we can live with them. We can live with these disagreements, and it can bring shalom. It can specifically bring shalom. So if we can come together now, it doesn't mean we agree about everything now. But now in a time of Sfiras HaOmer, we're leading up to Matan Torah. That is the unifying factor of the Jewish people, is the Torah. We put our differences aside now, and try to really sometimes reflect, where do I stand? What am I really being sincere in my own motives? How does it affect everybody? Can realize that different things apply to different people differently. That I think this is the best time of year to bring shalom. Of all times of year.
This is the best.
This time of year. The time of year that's ripe with possibilities of disagreements is the best time for shalom. Is the best time to come together.